All right, we got a lot to get to today as the NHL inches closer to a return. Bottom of the hour, St. Louis Blues general manager Doug Armstrong will stop by to talk about some offseason changes with the former Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues. And we'll get into the NHL getting closer to coming back with Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 31 Thoughts here in a couple of moments. Meanwhile, Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne along with us today for another edition of Hockey Central. Gentlemen, are you feeling more optimistic than you were perhaps 24 hours ago that the NHL really does indeed plan on starting this thing, Stewie, on January the 1st?
I think I am, just based on the fact that the NBA and the NHL sort of go hand in hand with regards to issues like this. So I don't think it's going to be as early as the NBA, which I think they already noticed. So I'm saying January 15th. I want to say January 1st, but I'm saying it's closer to the 15th, but it's optimistic now. But what I like is that they're always fluid. They're always changing plans here. We were talking about a Canadian division last week, and now with these new border, restrictions with potentially being able to quarantine in 48 hours, Canadian teams will be able to play in the U.S. So I'm optimistic that the season will start early, just not as early as everybody thinks it will.
Justin, hold on to your thoughts. We'll get those in a second because we got to get Elliot on because he has a tea time. So we got to get to Elliot right away here as he's enjoying his vacation. And I say that tongue in cheek because you put up a blog last night on sportsnet.ca and here you are talking to us. Friedge, first of all, good afternoon. Safe to say the next couple of weeks we should expect a flurry of activities, rumors, truths, half-truths. What do you think the next couple of weeks looks like around the NHL?
Well, Jeff, first of all, I would like to begin this conversation by delivering a public apology to Justin Bourne, and he knows why. So Justin called me yesterday, and he's like, Elliot, I want to write something about the start. Tell me what you know. And then, you know, Bruce Garriott reported that there was a memo sent out, so I started making calls. And I was like, oh, no, I got it right. So I totally ruined Justin's story and stole his thunder. So I called Justin last night to apologize, but I am going to come on publicly and plead for forgiveness. So Justin,
now everyone can understand when
that.
I write a garbage article later today that I had the rug pulled out from under me at least. I appreciate that, Elliot.
I totally drove the bus over you. So everybody needs to know that.
We look forward to Justin Bourne's top 10 right wingers from 57 to 63 coming out tomorrow at sportsnet.ca. Go ahead, Friedge.
All right. So, you know, I just heard, you know, a little bit of what Anthony said at the end there. I think the next 2 weeks is going to be, they're really going to grind and try to get it done, the league and the players. Now, I know it has been suggested that maybe in the Board of Governors conference call tomorrow, there would be a plan proposed that maybe they could vote on or look at. I'm told that's highly unlikely. I don't think it's going to be ready by tomorrow. That might change, but I'm told it's unlikely. I think that, you know, there's a couple of things here. Number one, I do think, Anthony, they're going to try for January 1st. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it. It might be too ambitious, but I think they are going to try and do it. And, you know, since I wrote last night, I've had, you know, some more people kind of reach out and give me nuggets about what they're hearing. And one of the things is that they've kind of looked at what happened in baseball. And baseball's way was you start, you get going, and you adjust on the fly. You deal with what you have to deal with. And I think there's concern that if hockey starts later and COVID interrupts the schedule, as we all assume at some points it will, the less time and runway you give yourself, the more you risk your season not finishing. So I think that the league and the players understand that. I think the players are getting anxious. I think they kind of want to play. There's one big issue we're going to start that they still have to sort out, but I think they're going to want to start as early as possible because it gives you more runway to deal with the speed bumps that come. It also allows them to plan their season with a couple weeks maybe at the end where they can make up games that they might have to make up. If not, you can just move the playoffs up. But I think that's kind of what they're looking at right now.
Elliot, I've had some players reach out to me over the last couple of weeks, asking, what I think the rollback or escrow is going to be next year. And I'm like, well, don't ask me. I'm on my way to the minor hockey rink to deal with the kids, so I'm the wrong guy to ask. So, we've had some debates on the show and saying it could be 30-40% over the next couple of years here. Where do you see the players at being next year, the next couple of years with regards to salary and paying taxes, escrows, and rollbacks?
Well, first of all, I wonder, do you charge your kids escrow like Anthony when they're playing?
I bet he does.
Maybe, HST, that's it. That's all I'm allowed to charge, HST.
Maybe that's what the players are asking. Like, what do you charge your kids escrow, and what should we be asking for something comparable? That's set out in the CBA in terms of what the escrow targets are supposed to be. It's 20% for this year, and then it starts dropping over the next few years. I think the worry from the owners is if we can't have fans, and at the beginning nobody's assuming fans, I think it's just a matter of where we go here, that the actual totaled escrow, if you didn't have it capped, would be much higher than 20. And this to me is the issue. Now, the players argue, look, we signed a deal this year, 10% holdback, 20% escrow, which if you do the math, it's 72% of their gross salaries. We agreed to that. And as far as they're concerned, their position is whether we play one game or we play 70 games, it's 72% of our gross. Well, some of the owners have said that's not going to work. And so I think at some point in time, that's going to be a conversation in terms of, is there something else the two sides can agree to that solves this problem? I don't know what that would be. I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that that's come up in conversations between the league and the players, is that the math might not work, and we have to see what we can do here, if anything.
Elliot, the one huge detail that I'm still hung up on with all this is whether it's going to be hubs or no hubs, fans or no fans, and kind of getting mixed messages that, Gary Bettman had mentioned they may do something about hubs, but you had mentioned something to me last night about why they wouldn't want to do that necessarily. What's your take on where things stand in regards to hubs?
Well, I think the one thing, the commissioner did a virtual event yesterday with Adam Silver from the NBA and Rob Manfred from baseball, and he said that they're looking at all sorts of different ideas, whether it's hubs, whether it's a hybrid, whether it's playing in your own building. And he's right. You've got to be, you've got to be completely flexible. You've got to be willing to try anything. What I've been told, Justin, is in the last little bit, there's been a movement from teams in particular to play in their own buildings, whether there's fans or no fans. And one of the reasons I've been told is some of the teams have brought up, like, for example, the naming rights on their buildings. If you don't get events in there, do the payments get adjusted or anything like that? I'm still working on the full details, but I've been told, for example, that those are issues. So even if there's no fans there, if your building is on TV, you get the name out there, right? And these are all factors. It's part of HRR, for example. The players benefit from that too. So I think whether there's fans or no fans, there's a growing sense of teams want to play in their own buildings. I just don't know how entirely possible is it going to be. I've heard that's more likely in some, there's some situations right now where the governments may say, sorry, you can't play in their own buildings. And now as the cases are starting to spike, you also worry what's going to happen over the next month. So the other thing too, Justin, is if you play in hubs, you face the prospect of some games being on TV at really bad times for your market. You want the games in prime time or as close to prime time as you can in your market. So I think all of these things are being discussed. I've just heard in the last little bit there's been more of a movement from, can we play in our own buildings instead of hubs?
Hmm. So here's, with Elliot Friedman on Hockey Central, here's one of my questions through all of it, and it's a revenue question, so already Anthony's ears are perked up.
Escrow.
There will be, no, not about escrow, although escrow relates to everything here. There will be some markets where there will be some fans allowed, we believe, and other markets where the fans will be shut out. My question, Elliot, is where does the revenue go? I'll just say Columbus and Toronto for sake of conversation. If Columbus is allowed to have fans at Nationwide, and Toronto's not at Scotiabank. Does that money go right into the money for fans, for people buying tickets? Does that go into the Columbus Blue Jackets organization? Does it go into a pool? And will we ever see a day potentially where a team like Columbus might have to write a revenue sharing check to Toronto?
I think that stuff we're all kind of wondering about right now. Like, the revenue sharing is part of the CBA. And I actually wrote about that, like, how much would it could it change this year? And I was reminded that that has to be negotiated between the league and the players. So, as far as I know, it's as it stands normally, unless there's a conversation about changing it. I don't know if there has been a conversation or not about changing it. I'd be totally making it up, guessing in any particular way there.
Shifting to free agency right now, are you surprised that four-time, five-time, 30-goal scorer Mike Hoffman is still on the market? And where could you see him potentially ending up? And is it going to be sooner or later?
You know, I am surprised. I've been completely surprised at the way the forward market has totally cratered this offseason. You know, if you look at forwards who got $3 million deals, I think there's four of them. I think it's Taylor Hall, Tyler Toffoli, Dadonov, and Craig Smith. So, I mean, that's amazing to me. I do believe that Columbus is still in the market for a scorer, whether it's Hoffman or Granlund. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those two players ends up there. I think once we get a date and an idea of training camp, I think you might see some of that pick up. I do think there's a lot of interest in Hoffman. I just think that now I think players like Hoffman and Granlund have simply said, you know what, we're not getting what we wanted, so we're going to wait to pick our spot a bit here.
So, sorry to drag you back to the restart here, but it feels like even decisions like that kind of hinge on when that is. With you mentioning January 1st as a potential restart date, what happens with the Christmas break that players usually get? Is that going to be a hiccup?
You know, I've asked about that. I think there's been a conversations internally about the players. If there is a training camp in December, and don't forget the seven teams that missed the playoffs, they're hoping to get extra training camp time. That's been discussed. I do think it's possible. I do think they've talked about it, like, for this season only. Would you be willing to give that up in terms of going back and seeing your families? Maybe they get time off from their teams in their training camp city. But I do think there's a conversation going on about this year maybe not going back out of the city. So we'll see where it goes, but I know that's been discussed if they do want to start the season on January 1st.
So many hypotheticals, so many questions around all of this. And you wrote at Sportsnet.ca about the last possible cup date being July 15th. If there is a start to the season and then an extended pause as a big spike happens, would the NHL be married to that date, and do they have to be married to that date, considering their U.S. broadcast partner NBC has the Olympics hypothetically this summer?
I think it sure. I don't know. Like, I don't like to make absolutes about anything right now, Jeff. But I definitely believe that that says to me that they don't want to go into the Olympics, which is probably the wisest decision based on what they've said about summer TV.
I'm fast-forwarding this conversation. We keep going back. I'm fast-forwarding to 2021 here. So I think things have changed right now with regards to the Seattle team not being able to do what Vegas did in getting all these top assets. Who potentially could you see them getting, that could be a top player just with regards to the cap crunch that current teams are in right now?
Well, I don't know if I can name any specifics, Anthony, but the one thing I can say is that Seattle has benefited from an unfortunate situation. Like, teams were saying, we're not doing what we did with Vegas again. We're not making those mistakes. But I've got to tell you, the cap crunch, and nobody's expecting the cap to go up next year. It's going to be the same, and Seattle's going to benefit. Some teams are going to be stuck. All right, boys, I got to go.
All right, buddy.
Tea time.
Enjoy. Get out of here. All right, thanks, Freege.
All right, guys, take care.
There he is. All right, Elliot Friedman with his tea time. He is married to it. Thanks, as always, for Freege for stopping by.
That's clout, by the way, Jeff. That's clout. Like when, you can
just shut it down
to be like, listen, guys, we're off the box right now. I got to book it. I love it.
So here's okay. Any aspiring young broadcasters right now, that's where you want to get to, where you can shut down an interview and just say, all right, I'm done. I'm out. Check me out on Facebook. I'm out of here. I got to go.
I noticed his answers, like his first two answers were like probably about 4 minutes each. And then the last one, like 30 seconds. I'm like, someone's like, tell him to hurry up. Let's go.
Someone's on the course pointing at their watch right now. Okay, so a lot to unpack there. Justin, you were about to go, so let me turn this around and ask you something here. Out of all those points that we just hashed out there with Elliot, whether it's, you know, start date, whether it's hubs, whether it's compensation, which is always top of mind for our man Stewie, what's the big one for you?
Well, the start date is like, it's interesting, but it's within a range. So it doesn't get the nod here for me, because it's like, it's going to be January 1st to, you know, whatever, a couple weeks after that, maybe 3 weeks at most after that. So we know that range. To me, it's the format of this, the hubs or not hubs thing. And I understand that there's naming rights, and I understand that, you know, there's other incentives for teams to play in their own buildings, but it just doesn't seem viable to me that we're going to have 31 markets with different levels of COVID and spread and, you know, border restrictions, and everyone's just going to go back to flying around and then see what happens, as Major League Baseball did. That just seems super dicey given the current climate in North America.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they divvy up the assets, with some teams playing and some teams playing with fans and without fans, and just a different market now, because after the election now, there's going to be some states that aren't going to be inclined. They're going to be inclined to maybe stay shut down and not have, you know, these venues full of fans where they may have felt pressure before the election. So I think that's definitely going to be interesting. But I just want to know how last week, literally on Friday or Thursday, we were talking about, oh, yeah, this Canadian division is going to be great. Battle of Alberta, 6 games in 6 nights. Guys, their heads are going to be flying off to, oh, yeah, by the way, there's not going to be a hub anymore. I want to know how that transition happened as well.
What do you make of the idea of the Canadian division, though, Stewie? I mean, it does make a lot of sense, as long as, I mean, that's the way you have to do it if the border is still shut.
I like it. I think it'll be fairly competitive, but I think it's, you know, from a safety standpoint, it's great. You don't want to be crossing the border, and how do you keep track of, you know, going across from Canada to US? What if someone does catch COVID? What happens with the quarantining and stuff like that? So I think if you have that Canadian hub, everybody's still in the same country, you're not going to have those issues, because people say, it's easy getting across the border as a professional athlete. Not during COVID.
We've seen seasons, guys, with 48 games. I mean, we've seen a couple of half seasons. We go to the 94-95 lockout. We go to the most recent one as well, with shortened seasons. I think personally that 82 is a pipe dream. 72 might be a better target if you still want to have a robust season. The number 56 is out there as well for possible games. Justin, do you have a minimum requirement for games? Or do you just kind of say, play on, whether it's 56 or 36, let's go.
No, you know, I think hockey is a sport that has a lot of variability within it. You can have bad luck for long stretches, and you need that 82 games to kind of sort out who's the best team. I think you need a lot of hockey games. You know, I'm biased there because I want to watch a lot of hockey games, but I do think that the season loses credibility when you start getting down to 48 and even 56. I would like to see a number north of 60, and I think they'll be able to pull that off. It's just a matter of, to Elliot's point about, you know, the players saying it doesn't matter if they play one game or 72 games, they think they're entitled to 72% of their salary. You know, it's going to be a harder sell to them to ask them to play 5 games every week or something like that to earn that money when they're going to get paid the same regardless.
That's what I was going to say. There's not a minimum requirement for game, but there's a maximum requirement for money, and that is all of the money. So I think that's going to be a big tipping point, or it's going to be a big battle between the PA and the National Hockey League, the divvying of the funds, and how much of that money are the players actually going to get.
You know, I am still curious about, and we mentioned this with Elliot as well, and you guys have talked about it, you know, where does the money that comes out of tickets, because there will be some teams that will have fans in the building, does that all go into a pool and get divided out? Or do you just say, hey, Boston Bruins, you won the COVID lottery. You can have 8,000 fans in your building. Stick that in your jeans. Nah. That to me leads to an interesting, and I bring up the Toronto example for the obvious reasons. I think Brian Burke has talked to us a number of different times about the Maple Leafs writing revenue sharing checks to the tune of $25 million. Could we actually see a scenario where a small market team has to write a revenue sharing check to MLSE?
It's possible. Here's a question for you guys. How do you feel about the idea that the seven teams that missed playoffs last year could conceivably get an extra 7 days leading into the season?
I think they will.
I think they will, too.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Do you think
but are you really going to get that advantage after sitting around for five? Well, that's like, what I'm saying. It's like, well, here's your advantage that it's probably not going to make. So it's almost like just giving them nothing. Like, thanks.
Well, yeah, I'm not really sure exactly if it – I guess it's an advantage. At the same time, like, now the guys have been back for 3 weeks, you know, which is kind of a long time compared to the rest of the – I don't know. I can't really make sense if it makes a difference. And also, are we rewarding the teams now who sucked last year? Like, you missed playoffs, here's your reward? I don't know. I don't know if we need this.
I just solved the problem right now. How about the fans make the schedule and it's based on pay-per-view revenue? So they have a pay-per-view saying, well, we want to see Toronto play Vegas 26 times and we're willing to pay this. So if it's a pay-per-view, you can generate $3 million for a game because you want to see these two teams play. Imagine that. I just thought of that on the spot.
Did you see
there are certain rights holder issues.
Battle of Alberta, 50 games, last man standing.
There was an NBA player who did something. I think it was Spencer Dinwiddie who said, whichever fan base raises the most money in a GoFundMe, I'll go play for your team for $1 million salary. So like if the fans pull together millions of dollars, he would go there, and then you only take the $1 million cap hit for the team. All of a sudden, the fans pit, you know, you know you're somewhere where you're wanted and you're helping the team out. I love the idea of the fans being involved somehow, maybe bilking them for millions of dollars.
Make one Globetrotter team, you put the best players on one team, and they just travel and play all the other teams, just dust them off. That's an idea as well.
which team in the NHL then is the Washington Nationals, Stewie? Put you on the spot there.
Detroit.
All right. So listen, we're going to be joined by Doug Armstrong here towards the bottom of the hour. We encourage you to go back and listen to the podcast format of this program, which is available after it goes off the air on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, to hear our conversation with Elliot Friedman. There is a Board of Governors meeting tomorrow. We don't believe there will be any official proposal or anything final or any type of recommendation to the BOG. But it does very much, guys, seem as if this is inching closer to this idea. Like Elliot says, they're going to go for it. Like, they're going to take a good hard swing at this ball to try to get this thing on for January the 1st. And I'm shocked by it. But then again, I was the guy that said, I don't know if they can get through an entire playoff with the two-city bubble format. So take anything I say with a grain of salt.
Guys can go home for Christmas? Can you imagine that? Guys return, then they got to go home for Christmas and mingle with all their families, then come back before Jan 1? Doesn't that feel dicey?
No, I don't think they're going home for Christmas. I think it's just going to be one of those years. Like,
they've been on permanent Christmas now. They've been on Christmas for 8 months. They want to get out of the house. They want to get back to rinking on the ice. Trust me.
All right.
Yeah, from a player point of view, Stewie, like, how many guys are itching to get back and how many guys are like saying, whoa, pump the brakes here?
No, the guys want to get back. Hockey players are creatures of habit where they love going, they love going to the rink. They love the routine. They love going out to eat with the boys after going home, taking a nap, going to the gym, rinse and repeat. So when they mess with that schedule, guys sort of get messed up and it hurts guys mentally. I understand they're paid millions of dollars, but they're used to that schedule, used to that routine. And this COVID has thrown everybody into a loop. I'm seeing guys now training, they don't know whether to go full throttle, half throttle, quarter throttle, no throttle, because it's unprecedented times. So they don't really know. So that's why I'm saying I think the first quarter of the season next year is going to be awful, because there's going to be guys that are super prepared, guys that are super out of shape because they haven't gone through the situation before.
Some guys are back in town. Leo Draisaitl is in Edmonton. Freddie Anderson's in Toronto. Some guys are ready to rock.
Yeah. What would you be doing now, Stewie? I mean, all this would be that's probably a better conversation for Matt Nichol.
Well,
you're working with Matty. What would you be doing?
I was going to say I'd be the queen of Walsh, of queen of queen king of Queen Street, but I don't know. I would, because I'm just, because when Matty trains guys, he does it in phases. There's phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. But, you know, some guys are coming back from playoffs like Sagan. I know he's hurt, but what phase would he be coming back from a Stanley Cup finals knowing that he has to go back in 2 months? And then what about a guy like, you know, Wayne Simmonds, who's been off since March? So even the trainers, they don't really know what to do because there's guys in different phases. So I wouldn't want to have Matty's job where you got to figure out, you know, what to train and who to train at what time. So even from the ice perspective, you know how hard it is to get ice in Toronto during the winter months right now, and even booking ice is a hard time for some trainers as well.
I think everyone's of the particular mindset, and Stewie, I mean, you coach in the GTHL, you train kids as well. I've got a couple of kids that play OMHA. Like, I think, like, you look at everything this season and you say, look, I'm going to put up with a lot of things that normally wouldn't make sense and a lot of things that are all leaving us with the number of questions in order to make this regular by 21-22 for that season. I know Hockey Canada, you know, for minor hockey, the MO is just get through this year however it looks, and we all know, and it already is, a dog's breakfast. It's a game of stops and starts, both on the ice, off the ice. Okay, now you have 10 kids. Now you can have 50 in a building. Now there's parents. Now there's not. We're not having any games. This is Max's 3-on-3 or 4-on-4. You can't have 5-on-5, etc. It seems as if, in the NHL, all sports leagues are of this mindset, that this is just something that you need to get through, and it's not going to make sense to a lot of people, and it's going to be ugly, but you just have to get through it with the eyes of returning to some type of normalcy for 2021-2022. Is that, Justin, a fair statement?
I think so. You know, I think the NBA is that's part of the reason they're coming back so early, is just trying to get everything back on the proper track. I know the NHL has done some research and doesn't believe that the eyeballs are there in the summer. This is a winter sport. They need to do everything they can to get back onto their normal track.
Yeah, but I think especially with the minor hockey too, it's almost just, you almost have to write it off as development year, and as opposed to putting all this money that you're normally doing, paying for trainers. Put the money in a backyard rink. That's what I'm doing. I'm building a backyard rink. Instead of taking my kids, you know, and paying 60, 70 bucks every time they touch the ice, go in the back, get some hot cocoa, go play in the back for 3 hours. You'll be just fine.
Ours is going up this weekend. I'm with you. All right, we'll step away. Doug Armstrong, he's the general manager of the St. Louis Blues. It's been an interesting offseason for St. Louis with subtractions, with additions, and with injuries. We'll go over all of it with the St. Louis Blues general manager, Doug Armstrong. Hockey Central continues. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, and yours truly. We're back in a moment. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. General Manager of the St. Louis Blues, Doug Armstrong, joins us now on the program. Doug, good afternoon. Thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm real good. How are you guys doing?
We are well. You know, in the first half of the program, I mean, everyone's, you know, getting excited now. It looks like the NHL inching towards a return. Target date, January 1st. We all know what the questions are and how they get resolved, etc. I'm curious, from your perspective and your position with the St. Louis Blues and in the NHL, how much are you kept informed as a GM of a team as to what the NHL is doing right now?
Honestly, very, very little, in the sense that I think that, and I agree with that format, quite honestly. I think the league and the PA work behind closed doors. I think if you get too many cooks in the kitchen, you can spoil the broth. So what the league and the PA, I think, are doing a very good job of doing are, you know, going through the process and coming to the Board of Governors at the appropriate time with a plan. I think that, as I said, if you have too many people involved in this, I don't think you'd ever get any traction.
We love truculence on this program, and I'm asking this question on behalf of Brian Burke, who's on vacation. you added Kyle Clifford in the offseason. What does he bring to the St. Louis rosters team?
Well, before I go there, how can Berkey tell between working and vacation? I'm not sure the difference there.
I'll spread that message, yeah?
Okay, good. Yeah, no, Kyle Clifford brings in an identity that I think is similar to the type of team we've had over the last 5 or 6 years, going back to pretty well when I got here. We built our group a certain way, and I think it's just been exemplified, or with Craig Berube coming in here. We want to play a game really below the top of the circles down. We're a north-south team. You sort of play to your strengths, and our strengths are our depth, our ability to roll four lines. And I think Kyle brings us someone that has that understanding of how to turn a game with a physical player, or turn a game making sure that the other team's best players know that there's a price to play at certain times of the game. So I think he's going to fit in very well with what we're trying to do and how we want to play the game.
Doug, I'm like many hockey fans, I'm fascinated at your guys' offseason. You knew you were going to lose a great player in Alex Pietrangelo, but you managed to add a great player in Torrey Krug on the back end. It was fascinating to watch that kind of play out in real time and not knowing how it worked behind the scenes, the decision of ending up with Krug. Could you maybe walk us through that day, that process, how you guys ended up making the deal with Torrey Krug?
Well, I'll go back to the few weeks prior to that. Our focus was always trying to get Pietrangelo signed if possible, knowing that each day crept close to free agency, it looked less and less like we're going to get something done. And then we made both sides, Alex and us, made a strong effort on the Thursday to get something done. But when it got to 11 o'clock Central Time on Thursday evening, we knew that our ability to try and get that eighth year to bring down the AAV was gone. And so I felt that the likelihood of him coming back was a lot less than it was with the eighth year. So we got, we were disappointed, but in our business, you get up the next day and you look, okay, what's the next best scenario? We talked about it before. It was a long 3 hours, quite honestly, from 8 to 11, watching it and hoping that, Krug was a number one player for us, that we didn't see something come across, that he and Boston had agreed to terms. When 11 o'clock Central rolled around that day, he was our first call, and an introductory call. I had a call with him, and then I arranged a call with he and Craig. Talking at that point, you're not talking finances. You're talking more fit on the team, what we're trying to accomplish. He's a player that I think looked at our group. He's coming in. Our age group is very similar to him. He sees a path to winning over the term of his contract. So I sort of walked through the veteran players, the middle-aged players, the younger players, and how we were going to bring him into a sustainable group over 7 years. And then we got down to the finances. And, you have peaks and valleys in that 2 or 3 hours of the financial talk. You have to go through term and signing bonus and no movement clause, no trade clauses, and you're really not sure who you're competing against. So it's pins and needles. And then when we got it done, it was a big time for organization. I think our players, they obviously understand the business part of it, but they also want to be part of a competitive team. So obviously no one was excited when Alex decided not to stay in St. Louis. But I think our players felt comfortable that as an ownership group and a management group that we were going to respond to that decision. And bringing Krug and Clifford, I think, made them feel that they're losing a good friend, but we're still going to be a competitive hockey team.
With Doug Armstrong, general manager of the St. Louis Blues, we talk about doors closing and at the same time doors opening. And I look at this situation on the back end with your squad, and I see another door opening for Colton Parayko. What is the expectation now for him, and does he get a bump in his career out of all of this?
Well, we're hoping. Again, we don't want to put too much pressure on him, but he should be able to touch all facets of our game, which is 5-on-5 on both ends of the special team. He's a physical specimen. He's a great skater. He's got a great shot. Now it's just getting that opportunity to put all that together. And it's quite honestly a lot like when Kevin Shattenkirk was in St. Louis and Alex Pietrangelo wanted a bigger piece of the power play pie. But, that was Kevin's specialty. And then that door opened up and Alex became a part of that. I think now the door with Pietrangelo leaving, the door is opening for Parayko to take a bigger role. And I think having... we believe self-serving, obviously, but we believe our defense is very well organized with Krug and Parayko, Scandella and Falk, Dunn, Bertuzzo, Gunnarsson, all experienced guys with young guys pushing. We have the appropriate number of right and left shots. So we think we have a very strong balance of and a team that is going to be able to play the game in all different ways. We think Krug is going to obviously improve our transition game, and we think that Parenko, Falk, Bertuzzo, Scandella can defend with anyone. And really the wild card and the player that I'm most excited about is Vince Dunn. He's a young player that has shown great flashes, and I'm hoping that this gives him an opportunity to take come in and grab a huge part of our team. It's one thing, being an NHL player, and then being an NHL player you're counted on. And I really have high expectations for Vince to come in here and really, really push to make our team better.
With Tarasenko being out an extended period of time, is that a hole you're going to look to fill via trade or free agency, or is it another case of a younger guy or another guy stepping up and making the most of the opportunity?
Yes, Stuart, it's one of those ones where you look at the team, well, how are you going to fill that? And the reality is you can't replace Tarasenko, but also to do anything now, we expect Tarasenko to play sometime in the 21 season. And so you have to be able to have the area of $7.5 million cap space. So you could bring in a player, and then all of a sudden, Vladdy's ready to play 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, whenever that is, into the season. And then you have to move $7.5 million off your roster. That's very difficult to do. We're seeing that right now over the fall for teams to get cap compliant. And I don't think it's going to get easier when the season starts. So we're not, I don't see us altering our roster. Now you say that and the phone might ring and there might be a deal too good to pass up. But right now I think we're going to need Jordan Kyrou, a skating right shot player to have a big year. We're going to need Thomas to have a good year. These are young players that have put in their time. And now a little bit like Vince Dunn, you're in the NHL. Now what type of player are you going to be in the NHL? And we need these guys to be primetime players. I like the balance of our group up front, but we're going to need some of these younger players to no longer be younger players, but just really good players.
I'm glad you mentioned Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou. There's a couple guys looking at your roster and saying, all right, without Tarasenko, who scores the goals for this team? I was trying to have a sense for what to expect from Robert Thomas in particular, a guy who's now entering his third season in the league, yet just turned 21 a couple of months ago. What are your thoughts on what we can expect from Robert Thomas next season?
Well, as a management, and this is always the push and pull between management and coaching, we'd like to see him get an opportunity in that top six, and I think our coaches would love to get him in there too, but there has to be the belief that he's earned it inside the locker room, and I really think that Robert can do that. I think whether we play him on right wing, potentially with, let's say, Schwartz and Shen, or you put him in the middle and you move one of those guys, Shen, over to the wing, I think there's a place for him in that six, but even if he plays... if he comes as our third line center and we go Shen, O'Reilly, and Thomas, he's going to get good players to play with. So we are hoping that he becomes one of those players that is looked upon in the league as a top young player. We've seen guys do that in their third year, and we have high expectations for him. And quite honestly, for us to reach our ultimate goals, we're going to need Robert Thomas to be a real player.
So, and we're talking to Doug Armstrong, general manager of the St. Louis Blues. I was having a conversation with someone a few days ago who, young hockey player, NHLer, who works with Joey Hischen in the off seasons, as does Ryan O'Reilly. And this player was gushing about, the work ethic and dedication and attention to detail of Ryan O'Reilly. It must be, Justin just mentioned someone like Robert Thomas a second ago. It must be great for these younger kids to have someone like O'Reilly in the room and on the ice, practice, in the gym, all of it, to show them what it means to be a professional. When it comes to his work ethic on, off the ice, all of it, could you compare O'Reilly to anyone from your past, Doug? Anything remind you of anybody?
Yeah, Yuri Lettinen. I had a chance to work with Yuri in Dallas for a number of years. Just someone that he doesn't vocalize his feelings a lot, but he comes in, he's the hardest working guy in the gym, and then he transfers that to the hardest working guy on the ice. Then he transfers that to staying on the ice extra. He's not looking to drag people along. He says, if you want to get better, this is what I try and do to get better, but you're on your, he's a great asset to players, but not, he's not doing it to he's doing it because that's how he believes he can become the best player, and he'd like other guys to come around him. And when I say Yuri Letton, I say that with the utmost respect. I think Yuri's a Hall of Fame player for me. You know, he's done everything he can do, and I see a lot of similarities in those two players.
Last winger to win the Selkie. Stewie.
You guys traded Jake Allen in the offseason to Montreal. Was that a deal that you guys had to make, or was it more so of Ville earning an opportunity to step up and get some NHL experience?
Yeah, I would say it was the latter. Husso was a player that we've had high hopes for, quite honestly. He was probably a half a letter grade ahead of Binnington 2 years ago when the season started, and then Ville got hurt. Bennington went on a good roll, and the rest is history, obviously, what Bennington did. But, you know, Stewie, you sort of have a feel of when you talk to their managers, and I knew that Husso was not going to clear waivers. So it was either trade him or put him on our team. And the thought of going into this season having two very good goaltenders, and Benton Allen, both on the last year of their deal, both going to be unrestricted, and then looking down, we are certainly missing a layer that you know, that tier of our next top goaltenders just turning pro as his first year. So we felt it was important to give Husso that opportunity because we didn't want to trade him. We knew we would lose him, and we also have belief in him. And this is now where the rubber meets the road right now, is that it's really regardless how I feel about him or how much belief we have in him. You know, he's got to come in and get it done, and he's got to prove it to himself and his teammates. And I believe he can do it. But again, you know, that and $4 gets you a cup of coffee at Starbucks in the States. So he's just got to get it done.
Yeah. So when you're hearing all the potential formats for the NHL's return, is there something that you're holding out hope for? Would you rather see teams play in their own buildings, or the hub thing appeal to you? What's your preference?
I start with the foundation. I just want to get back to work and play.
Sure.
You know, obviously, you know, anyone that's in sport, it's a much more enjoyable being in the going to the rink and seeing the anticipation build within the fans. You know, for a 7 o'clock game at six o'clock, the doors open, and then all of a sudden at 7 o'clock, you can feel the excitement as the game goes on. But ultimately, we want to work. And we want to, if we can't provide in front of the 18,000 to 20,000 a night, we want to provide in front of all the fans watching. But our goal would be playing our own building in front of our own fans. But sometimes you got to crawl before you can walk, before you can run. And the first thing is just getting back out on the ice and playing.
With you. We all have our fingers crossed. Doug, thanks so much for parking some time with us today. Much appreciated. Best of luck when this thing gets back on the ice. Thanks for taking time today.
Guys, always a pleasure talking to you, and stay safe.
There he is, Doug Armstrong, the general manager of the St. Louis Blues, a busy offseason for St. Louis. As Stewie mentioned, saying goodbye to Alex Pietrangelo, but bringing in Torrey Krug, who, by the way, may have the biggest calves of anyone in the NHL right now. I know some guys just have them, and some guys just can never get them. I think Torrey Krug, Stewie, and Justin may have the biggest calves of anyone in the NHL today. Stewie! When you played, who had the biggest calves?
I don't know, but I don't know if that's a positive trait. Wayne Simmons has the smallest calves in the National Hockey League, and he's a killer. So I'm just trying to think who was the most jacked player. Greg Campbell is probably one of the guys that was in the best shape that I've played with. I hate giving him credit because he busts my chops all the time. But calves? I'm not really looking at calves. You're looking at pecs and, you know, biceps and curls for the
calves.
Girls. I don't know.
Calves. Just look at these. I could never get them. Borny, could you ever get calves? I could never do it.
I got some calves. I have a quality calf definition, Jeff, but I'll say Rich Kloon. Rich Kloon is just an overall beast.
Oh, he's overall. Those guys.
Yeah. So it's,
but there's a story that somebody in the NHL had fake calves. I don't know who told that story. I think that was you that told that story, Jeff. I don't know if we could tell it now, but we can tell it later. That's a hilarious story.
Just a chicken cutlet in there or what?
Put it this way. It's not someone who's in the NHL right now, but he showed up one day in the room with implants. And the guys,
I don't know.
Yes,
about this.
I got it from someone who was in the room, and it's someone that you know as well. Showed up in the room with calf implants. All of a sudden, boom! There's these grapefruits out of nowhere.
Shame. The shame that person should feel.
Oh, and he did. The guys never let him live it down. Thanks to Doug Armstrong, GM of the St. Louis Blues, for stopping by today. All right, we'll hit a break. More Hockey Central here in a couple of moments. Hockey Talk and Cavs as well at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jiffy has helped clean out our prize closet and create four mystery boxes that contain all kinds of items like signed jerseys, photos, and more that you could win. Tune in during Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid to collect keywords, and then text them to 590-590 with your first name, last name, and city for your chance to qualify. Qualifiers will be selected during leadoff and immediately win $100 to spend at Jiffy. Fast and reliable home maintenance for less. Tune in weekday mornings and get ready to call in to qualify. If you hear your name announced, your next keyword will be announced at 4 p.m. during Writer's Block. Find full details at sportsnet.ca/590. Welcome back to the program, Merrick, alongside Bourne and Anthony Stewart. Off the calf talk and back to the discussion we were having at the top of the show with Elliot Friedman. Justin, we'll start with you. Reason for optimism. The next 2 weeks, we're going to hear a whole ton of stuff. There's a Board of Governors meeting tomorrow. We don't think there'll be an official proposal put forward or any type of recommendations, but it does seem as if we're nudging towards, I know Stewie wants January 15th, or that's what his spidey sense is saying, but towards a January 1st start date for the next NHL season. Your wide brush thoughts?
Well, my wide brush thoughts are that hockey doesn't feel so far away all of a sudden. There is your slice of optimism in the middle of November. It's like, if they're going to come back Jan 1, or even if it's January 10th, whatever it is, if it's around there, they're going to have to come back in the middle of December at some point, middle, late December. Suddenly we've got hockey here in, like a month away. It doesn't seem as far away. If players are going to start coming back to their cities at some point here, and maybe we're turning a corner here towards next season.
Feels like 5 minutes ago Tampa was beating Dallas. Sorry, Stewie, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it's great that we finally see a light at the end of the tunnel, where before we weren't sure if we were even coming back. So I think it's optimism now for the not just the players, but the fans and the league as a whole. So it's a great day, but we're not there yet. We'll see how the next couple weeks goes.
Are we allowed to start, you know, handicapping what the season's going to look like, or do we need to find out actually that there's going to be a season and what the divisions are going to look like?
I thought you said, are we allowed to start? I thought you said, are we allowed to start planning the parade? I thought you were going to say that. I was going to start laughing.
Okay, well, here's on the spot then. If there is a Canadian division, who's the top team? Who's the worst team?
Toronto. Ottawa.
Bourne, yeah. you want to kick over that hornet's nest?
It's actually the only easy way you could ask that question, because I'll take Toronto and Ottawa too, because the other five are, I don't know, throw them in a blender at that point.
All right. We thank Elliot Friedman for stopping by and then bailing on us for his tea time. Thanks so much, Friege. His latest on the NHL's return at sportsnet.ca right now. And thanks to Doug Armstrong, general manager of the St. Louis Blues, and thanks to the St. Louis Blues for making their general manager available on this day. Thanks so much for joining us. Smith & Jones next. Hockey Central returns tomorrow right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Enjoy another great day. Man, it's nice out there.